And he said he spoke for all Swedes in paying tribute to the great American president.
Alan, halfway around the world, the Far East, which is 12, 13, and in some cases 14 hours ahead of us, is waking up on Saturday morning to the news of the death of the president. And for the story, as it looks in Tokyo right now, we're going to hear from CBS News correspondent Peter Kalischer in Tokyo.
A shocked Japan that was to have witnessed a film television greeting from President Kennedy, relayed by Telstar from the United States early this morning, learned instead that the president had been assassinated. The live part of the program went on as scheduled, but the film greeting by Kennedy, who by then had been dead for an hour and 20 minutes, was deleted. No reference to his death was made on the program, but the news was bulletin by radio. The Emperor and Empress of Japan, Prime Minister Ikeda, and other high Japanese officials have sent messages of condolence to the White House. Ordinary Japanese were at first incredulous. How could this happen in America was the question asked this correspondent over and over. Then genuine sorrow was expressed and concern over the future of world affairs. I hope nothing happens to disturb the peace, said a student on the way to school. The third annual U.S.-Japan Economic Conference, which was to have opened Monday, was postponed indefinitely when five members of President Kennedy's cabinet, including Secretary of State Gene Rusk, on their way to Tokyo, flew back to Hawaii on news of the president's death. This is Peter Kalischer in Tokyo.
Well, that's the first reaction we've had from the Far East. Undoubtedly, additional reaction will come in from elsewhere as the news spreads. And as we said, it is now Saturday morning in the Far East. It will be interesting to observe the reaction in South Vietnam, among other places. In South Vietnam, in Laos, in Cambodia, and in Thailand, all parts of Southeast Asia, which have been threatened with communist aggression and subversion, and which has been so much on the president's mind in the past 3 years. Ever since he became president. Alan?
Dallas, there are a couple of side notes to reaction in the Far East to follow up on Peter's report from Tokyo. On Formosa, aides to Chinese nationalist leader Chiang Kai-shek awoke him to advise him of the death of President Kennedy, and they described Chiang Kai-shek as being horrified. The news hit India after midnight Indian time, when most of the nation slept. The shock awaited them when they awoke and are awaking now. But one of them was Prime Minister Nehru, and aides say that they were reluctant to awaken him because they say the news would shock him beyond words. Well, of course, it is now morning in New Delhi. Prime Minister Nehru is awake and certainly has received the news. Other expressions of grief are coming in from around the world. In Cairo, President Nasser of the United Arab Republic is reported to be immensely grieved at the assassination. The newspaper Al Aram in Cairo said Nasser had cabled condolences to Mrs. Kennedy, saying, "With his death, humanity, progress, and peace suffered a loss by no means less great than yours. It is a painful tragedy." The expression of Egypt's President Nasser. Queen Juliana and Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands sent messages of condolences to Mrs. Kennedy. In Algiers, President Ahmed Ben Bella telephoned our Ambassador William Porter to express his sorrow. Peru's President Belaunde Terry was visibly shaken. He telephoned our ambassador in Lima and said, "I consider his death as an irreparable world loss. I am praying for the Kennedys." The Shah of Iran, King Hussein of Jordan, King Badouin of the Belgians, or three other monarchs who have joined in the world sorrowing. In Paris, the usually gay nightclubs and cafes have been plunged into gloom. One waiter at the nightclub, upon hearing of the news of the president's death, said, "It is incredible. I don't want to believe it. It is a joke in bad taste." But news of the death came over the radio in English pubs filled with Friday evening crowds and left most persons with no thirst for beer. As one of them said, "Everybody just stopped drinking when it was announced." And now we have more reaction from the capital of Russia. Let's hear now again from Moscow and CBS News correspondent Stuart Novins.
The final broadcast on Radio Moscow tonight reported the shock of the people of the United States, and Radio Moscow's correspondents around the world were quoted as reporting the same numb reaction of people in other capitals. The news broadcast talked about the suspected murderer as connected with ultra-right-wing elements. The bulletin said that Mr. Kennedy had in his pocket a speech denouncing ultra-right-wing opponents, which he was to have delivered in Dallas. The hard news was followed by a biography of the late president, one that had been given on earlier broadcasts, calling him a great American and a great statesman. Then Radio Moscow reported that Lyndon Johnson had been sworn in and the biography of the new president was given. Johnson, President Johnson, is not very well known here. The man on the street has probably never heard of him. That unfamiliarity, coupled with the shock of the violent death of John F. Kennedy, has brought deep concern to the Russian people with whom we've talked. They're worried about what will happen now. They're frightened that an unknown man now wields that terrible, awful power that resides in the White House. They ask if Johnson is a man who can lead, if he can control what they have been told again and again is the warmonger group in the United States. Informed Soviet sources here say that Premier Khrushchev is on his way back to Moscow from Kiev. He has been in Kiev reportedly for more than a week, but was not expected back so quickly. His foreign minister, Andrei Gromyko, telephoned United States Ambassador Kohler shortly after midnight here tonight, about 3 hours ago, and expressed his personal shock and great sympathy. He said official condolence would come later from the highest sources. That would be Premier Khrushchev and President Brezhnev. Also, shortly after midnight, a large group of Russian students gathered in front of the United States Embassy here. They just stood silently for a while, talking in muffled tones to each other. Then they tried to get into the embassy, they said, to express their condolence to American officials. But Soviet militia guards outside the embassy did not permit them to enter. It is hard to say what really drew them there, curiosity or sympathy, but individually some expressed shock and bewilderment. One of the young men called him another Lincoln. Did he mean Kennedy the man had lived like Lincoln, or that Kennedy the president had died of an assassin's bullet as Lincoln the president had died of an assassin's bullet? A short fur-capped youth of about 18 called Mr. Kennedy a remarkable man. His friend asked the reporter, who is Lyndon Johnson? The man Lee Oswald has not been mentioned here, but sources in the American embassy confirm now that such a man, Lee Harvey Oswald, who has a Russian wife, registered at the embassy's consular section in November of 1959. The embassy says that Oswald apparently did not leave the Soviet Union until 1962. There are reports here from other sources that Oswald, sometime during 1959 and 1962, had asked for Soviet citizenship and had been turned down, it is said. We have not been able to confirm at this hour whether or not such a request for Soviet citizenship had indeed been made here. Oswald did return to the United States with his Russian wife and a daughter born here in 1962, according to official American sources. According to embassy records, Lee Harvey Oswald was born on October 18, 1939. His wife was born in 1941. Some Soviet sources here say that most of the period between his arrival in the Soviet Union in 59 and his departure in 1961, he spent in or near Odessa. At this hour, that is as much as is known about Lee Oswald. The Communist Party newspaper, Pravda, held up its front page for more than an hour beyond the usual release time today. Pravda came off the presses just about 15 minutes ago. It is now shortly after 3:15 in the morning of Saturday. Pravda published a portrait photo of the late president and a report from their TASS correspondent in New York. Americans are shaken by the slaying of the president, the story begins. It gives a straightforward report of the actual assassination. It says that commentators in Dallas had linked the crime to ultra-right-wing organizations. From the moment of President Kennedy's arrival, small groups of ultra-rightists gathered in the city under Confederate flags, the Pravda story says, and they carried signs hostile to Kennedy. Under the portrait of the late president, Pravda runs a biography of about 250 words. There were no black obituary bands around the story. This is Stuart Novins in Moscow.
Stuart, yes. One footnote on that report of yours. I wonder what evidence the Russians submit, aside from this report that they quote from Dallas as linking the crime with ultra-right-wing extremists, because there has been no such suggestion here.
That report was coupled with the initial story that was given here by Radio Moscow and later by Moscow Television. And in fact, the Voice of America broadcasts that were monitored here, and I heard many of them myself in English, also had the same connection and the same illusion. One would have to assume that they picked it up from Voice of America.
I see. Mm-hmm. Stu, well, thank you very much. We'll be back to you later on. That was Stuart Owens in Moscow. Alan?
Once again, Dallas, we're going to pass along a message to our listeners in our affiliated stations across the country. That is, that the CBS radio network will supply continuous programming throughout this evening and until 12 midnight Eastern Standard Time. That is 11 o'clock Central, 10 o'clock Mountain, and 9 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. This programming will consist entirely of news broadcasts and appropriate music. We will provide similar network programming tomorrow and Sunday. At the close of tonight's programming, we will notify our affiliated stations in greater detail of our plans for the weekend. And now we're going to pause for 5 seconds for stations to identify themselves. This is the CBS Radio Network.
Studio St. Paul, Minneapolis at 830 WCCO. 28 degrees, 26 and a half minutes past 6. Here is a change in a notice that we gave you earlier. The hockey game, Omaha at St. Paul, has now been canceled. For some time, it had been reported that the game would be played. The St. Paul professional hockey game tonight has now been canceled. The American Olympic hockey game at Rochester, as mentioned earlier, has been canceled. Here now are some specific announcements concerning University of Minnesota activities. The University of Minnesota theater performance, canceled tonight and tomorrow night. The Minnesota-Wisconsin football game scheduled for tomorrow has been called off. Repeating, the Gopher-Badger game at Memorial Stadium tomorrow has been called off. All Dad's Day activities are canceled. The Interfraternity Council at the University of Minnesota has announced that all social events planned for tomorrow night in the fraternity and sorority system at the university have been canceled. The Minnesota M Club Stag for this evening is officially canceled. Tomorrow night's dance at the University of Minnesota Law School, scheduled at the Curtis Hotel, is canceled. This announcement from the University of Minnesota News Service. On the occasion of the designation of a national day of mourning, classes and activities will be closed that day. Only such activities requiring emergency staffing will be maintained. Normal classes and office schedules will be maintained except on the officially designated National Day of Mourning. An item about the Minneapolis Symphony Orchestra. Tonight's performance will be given as scheduled in memory of the president, and the WAMSO post-symphony party at the Gaslight tonight will be canceled. We'll have announcements on high school activities in a few minutes. WCCO Radio continues its reports of the events following the assassination of President Kennedy. With more information, we now join Dallas Townsend at CBS Radio headquarters in New York.
Orleans, we went into city court. The charges against all of us but Oswald were dismissed. He was convicted and paid a fine. Police reports, records in New Orleans show that an L.H. Oswald was convicted of disturbing the peace and was fined $10 last August. Bringier has lived in New Orleans since February 1961. He operates a retail clothing store there. CBS News correspondent Hughes Rudd reports from Dallas, Texas, that the suspect, Lee Oswald, has just been let out of the police interrogation room and has been taken upstairs, presumably for booking. He has continued to deny any participation in the assassination of President Kennedy. It's not known at the moment whether he has been charged with the killing of Dallas policeman J.D. Tippit. The report that we had a few moments ago, which we read to you, would seem to indicate that Oswald must be intimately, closely connected with the killing of Tippit, because the cashier at the Texas Theater in the Oak Cliff section of Dallas says that she had spotted a man who looked like he was running from someone. He kept changing seats in the theater. This was just minutes after the president was assassinated. At that point, Dallas policeman J.D. Tippit and M.N. McDonald rushed to the theater and ran into a rear exit, and according to police headquarters, Tippit fired a shot, while McDonald rushed the suspect, who turned out to be Oswald, and subdued him after a fight. Tippit was shot dead. Oswald admitted owning a .38 caliber pistol, which was used, apparently, according to authorities, in the killing of Tippit. But Oswald has not admitted owning the rifle that was found in the building near the scene of the assassination. That's all we have at the moment on Oswald, but Hughes Rudd, as we said a moment ago, now tells us that Oswald has been taken out of the police interrogation room and has been taken upstairs, presumably for booking. Booking for what? Booking for what crime? We don't yet know. So far, he is still denying any participation in the assassination of President Kennedy.
Perhaps, Dallas, as the time goes along here, we will get more information on Oswald's connection with the assassination. Certainly, all of the circumstantial evidence appears to point in his direction. And from what we have learned from some biographical material from the wires and from Stu in Moscow and from this Cuban official in New Orleans, this apparently was quite a fanatical and incredible individual.
But, of course, Alan, none of this jibes with a report that we had from Mexico City about 40 minutes ago to the effect that informed sources in Mexico City said it was believed that the assassin, still not caught, might be heading for Mexico. Perhaps they're talking about some other assassin or would-be assassin.
Yes, I recall that even before that came in, the brief announcement came in that the border between Mexico and the United States had been closed. Maybe this was just a precautionary effort just to take cover all possible exits in case.
Alan, here's the latest on Oswald. The United Press International, in a report from Dallas, says Lee Harvey Oswald, a pro-Castro Marxist who once defected to Russia, today was jailed as the prime suspect in the assassination of President Kennedy. Oswald, a 24-year-old former U.S. Marine, was accused of shooting to death a policeman who tried to grab him in a theater just about the moment that President Kennedy was dying in Parkland Memorial Hospital. Another officer, McDonald, subdued Oswald, who lived in a Dallas rooming house with his Russian wife. It was the tip from the theater cashier that led police to him. The cashier, Mrs. Julie Postal, who works at the Texas Theater in the Oak Cliff section of Dallas, says she spotted a man who looked like he was running from someone. He kept changing seats in the theater. She had already heard of the shooting of President Kennedy and Governor Connally, and she called police. Oswald has admitted owning the .38 caliber pistol, which was used to kill patrolman J.D. Tippett. Tippett was shot twice. Oswald has not admitted owning a rifle found in a building near the scene of the assassination of the president.
Dallas, we have a further note on that question about the Mexican border. Our news bureau in Los Angeles reports that the Mexican border, which had been closed, presumably to keep any fugitive from crossing into Mexico, has now been reopened on a restricted basis. Bona fide Mexicans in the United States are being allowed back into Mexico, and American citizens who were in Mexico are being allowed to cross the border to come back into the United States.
Now from the WCCO Radio News Bureau. On Capitol Hill, one of those most shaken by the death of the president was Minnesota Congressman John Blatnick, who came to Congress along with John Kennedy 17 years ago. Here are Blatnick's words, telephoned from his office in Washington.
The assassination of President Kennedy was incredibly stunning, unbelievably shocking news I have ever received in my life. I still cannot believe it. This is an historical tragedy, both for our country and for the world. His tragic loss can only be likened to the tragic and sorrowful death of Abraham Lincoln nearly 100 years ago. In life, President Kennedy gave of himself to his utmost with great courage, devotion, and total dedication, born of deep conviction from the depths of his heart, to give full freedom to all the people of our country and to build up our domestic strength to support the tremendous requirements necessary to sustain us in world leadership dedicated to give peace, freedom, and the blessings of a good life to the people of the world. To be so insanely cut down in the prime of his life and at the height of his leadership is a tragedy which events of the near future will soon assess. John F. Kennedy and I came to Congress together 17 years ago as veterans of the recent World War II. I came to know him well personally as a very dear friend. And I came to know his courageous and gracious wife, Jackie, before they were married. I am personally shocked and deeply grieved beyond words. Let us say prayers for him and his family and for the future of our country.
Congressman John Blatnick served in the Central Intelligence Agency as a counter spy during the war. He told WCCO Radio that he was certain the authorities in Dallas had not revealed all the information they had concerning the killing of the president. If this is the work of a fanatic, Congressman Blatnick said, that's one thing. But if the killing was a part of an organized plot, then this country indeed faces a very serious crisis. He recalled that a Negro minister had been ambushed and killed by a maniac using a rifle with scopes, and there was the case of the Freedom Walking Mailman who was shot in the back as he walked along an Alabama highway. This begins to look like a pattern for killing, Blatnick said, resembling in some way the plot to kill President Lincoln. WCCO Radio continues its reports of the events following the assassination of President Kennedy. With more information from the CBS Radio Network, we join Dallas Townsend in New York.
New York is that President Johnson will be a vigorously healthy chief executive despite that heart attack of 8 years ago. They base this estimate on the vigorous life that he has led since his recuperation in 1955. The recuperation lasted for several months. Since then, of course, he's been through the political wars, including the 1960 election campaign, and as one specialist recalls, he's even faced a mob. This same specialist, who would prefer that his name not be used, says you could have no better proof of his complete recovery. He and other specialists deferred to Mr. Johnson's own physician, Dr. J. Willis Hurst of Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia, who is en route from New York to Washington. They can speak only of what medical science knows in general about recoveries from heart attacks. Each week, each month, and each year, the victim survives his personal disaster. His heart muscle is healing itself and ridding itself of scar tissue. Certainly, there can be no doubt that President Johnson today has been through the kind of shock that comes to few people in life. And as we could tell when he arrived at Andrews Air Force Base a while ago, he has survived it with full equanimity and obvious courage and determination, as he said, to do his best. Dick Hodlett, you are now coming into the studio. What thoughts do you have at the moment?
Well, the thoughts are those of on the consequences, the whys, the wherefore, questions which are not yet easily answered, which are still a matter of speculation, and perhaps we can, as the evidence accumulates, as we get other expert opinion, and as events unfold in Washington, we may be able to make a clearer picture of what is to follow, rather than just of the tragic event of the day. But do you have something from Washington
now?
Yes,
Dick, we may get a glimmer of that in a report we're going to get right now on the meeting that the president is having at the White House. So we'll switch to the White House and CBS News correspondent Paul Niven.
The legislative leaders have now arrived at the White House for their meeting with President Johnson. The group includes the Democratic and Republican leaders in the Senate, Senator Mansfield of Montana and Senator Dirksen of Illinois, the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Mr. Fulbright of Arkansas, Senator Hubert Humphrey, the Democratic whip, and Senator Thomas Kuchel of California, the Republican leader. The Republican whip. From the House side have come Congressman Charles Halleck of Indiana, the House Minority Leader, and Speaker John McCormick of Massachusetts, who now is second only to the President himself in the line of succession. There is undoubtedly, we have no word yet as to what is going on in the meeting. It is not difficult to imagine. Undoubtedly, there will be an appeal by the President for national unity in this moment of tragedy and crisis, and a response by members of both houses and members of both parties vowing their cooperation in the difficult days ahead. And while politics will not be discussed in the President's office, it will certainly be on the mind of everyone in that room. The Democrats will be wondering, for example, whether Lyndon Baines Johnson is to be their leader for 1 year during the remainder of Mr. Kennedy's unexpired term, or whether he will seek re-election and thus serve 5 years. On the Republican side, an example of the effect that the assassination of President Kennedy is likely to have in their party was seen in a statement issued tonight by a Republican congressman from Maine, Stanley Tupper. He said, "Every person in this land who has encouraged the vicious extremism that unleashed this murderous assault on President Kennedy and Governor Connally, and every politician who has not raised his voice against the paranoids of the radical right is equally guilty. And thus, while politics are not being discussed as President Johnson meets for the first time as president with his former congressional colleagues, now his legislative leaders, certainly politics is on the mind of everyone in that room. This is Paul Niven at the White House.
Later on, when the president, President Johnson, has a chance to discuss the situation with members of the cabinet, in addition to his discussions with the legislative leaders of Capitol Hill, his attention will be turned not only to the immediate domestic problems of this 88th Congress and of the United States as it stands today in the grip of enormous problems like civil rights, economic development, but also he will turn his attention to international affairs. President Kennedy had helped to inaugurate what the Russians call the spirit of Moscow, which the president and his advisors were very much more cautious about describing as only a beginning toward a possible exploration of means and ways of coming to further agreements with the Russians, further tactical and further technical and practical agreements. In the days and weeks to come, the key matters such as Vietnam and Berlin, United Nations matters which affect Africa, which affect outer space, will all be coming across the new president's desk.
Let's continue our CCO coverage now with these high school activity cancellations. The Minneapolis basketball preview in the auditorium has been postponed from tonight until December 4th. Here are some basketball games that have been canceled: Watertown at Eden Prairie, Amory, Wisconsin against Baldwin-Woodville, Austin De La Salle, Bloomington at Wilmer, Shakopee St. Anthony, Simley at Randolph, New Richmond, Wisconsin and Durand, Monticello at Elk River, Boyceville at Elmwood, Wisconsin. All of those basketball games canceled. The Osseo faculty game and high school wrestling matches at Stillwater and Sibley against Brooklyn Center. Other cancellations: the high school play at Hinckley, Minnesota tonight, the school play at Columbia Heights both tonight and tomorrow night, the St. Paul Wilson High School play, the Rockford School drama, St. Margaret's Academy play tonight, however tomorrow night's is still scheduled, the Robbinsdale High School vaudeville show has been canceled. WCCO Radio will bring you more special events information on community activities after further reports from the CBS Radio Network. It's 28 degrees, 17 minutes before 7. Diminishing cloudiness for the Twin Cities area and much colder tonight. Tomorrow, fair and colder. Occasional cloudiness and a little colder tomorrow night. The low tonight, 12 above. The high tomorrow, 20. The low tomorrow night, 5 above. We return to CBS now and hear the words of New York Mayor Robert Wagner.
The world mourns, the nation mourns, the city mourns. My grief and that of all New Yorkers I know is personal and irreparable. He was my friend. He was also a friend of man, a friend of peace, a champion and sword of justice. We, each and all, have suffered a loss, many losses, for which we cannot be consoled. Hate has reaped its harvest. Now we must not leave undone any of the great works he was doing, and doing so valorously, so eagerly, so brilliantly. A light has gone out in the world. The nation will carry on under President Johnson. New York City as a whole, and I as mayor, and as an individual, pledge him and our government, and I know our country, total and undivided support in these sad and most difficult and most challenging hours.
United Nations headquarters is in New York City, and the United Nations is a window on the world. There today we saw the shock and the dismay, the regret, the consternation in the faces and in the expressions of diplomats of all skin colors, of all political persuasions, of all religions, coming from all continents of the world. Men who have not always seen eye to eye with President Kennedy in his approach to foreign affairs, but who were at one with the American people today and with the president's associates in mourning the tragic and unnecessary passing of a great man, of a statesman whom many chose to describe in talking to me as the leader of the world, or the leader of the free world. The diplomatic corps in Washington is also
expressing its grief and its shock and its regret tonight. And, of course, as this opens further questions of international affairs, and we'll get a report on that now from CBS News diplomatic correspondent Marvin Kalb in Washington.
They used to say at the State Department that John F. Kennedy was his own Secretary of State, listening with due respect to Dean Rusk's advice, but rarely relying upon it. This relationship between White House and State Department is now expected to change. Until President Johnson acquires the self-confidence needed for his overall responsibility and the knowledge of his new worldwide powers, he will have to depend to an enormous extent upon Dean Rusk, his Secretary of State, to run this nation's foreign policy. That means that there will be no change in American foreign policy, no change in its commitments abroad, no change even in nuance. Only the personality of the office of the president has changed. Someone might say at this point that this is the glory of America, that in a moment of national tragedy, there is an orderly transition of power, not internal political chaos. Secretary Rusk is on his way back to Washington right now, expected to arrive shortly after midnight. He heard about Mr. Kennedy's assassination while en route to Tokyo for an important economic conference with the Japanese. Other members of the Kennedy cabinet are with him. He ordered the plane turned around immediately. American ambassadors all over the world have been notified formally by the State Department about President Kennedy's death. Messages of condolences from world leaders have been pouring into the department all afternoon.